Hello and welcome to Grazia Life Advice. I'm Hattie Crissell, the Acting Features Director of Grazia Magazine, and every week here I speak to women worth listening to, asking them to share six pieces of advice that they live by and the worst piece of advice they've ever received. The baker, cook, writer, presenter and national treasure that is Nadia Hussein joins us on the podcast this week. The day I spoke to Nadia in a tiny recording booth at the BBC, she was preparing for the broadcast of Nadia, Anxiety and Me, which was on TV that night. If you didn't catch it live, you can watch it now on iPlayer, and I really recommend that you do, especially if you or anyone you know suffers with anxiety. In our conversation, she opened up about what filming that documentary has meant to her, her ongoing management of her panic disorder, and the wisdom she's learned from her super close family life. Let me know what you think of the episode on Twitter or Instagram, as usual with the hashtag Grazia Life Advice. But for now, over to Nadia. Nadia Hussein, welcome to Grazia Life Advice.
Ah, thank you for having me.
Last night I watched your new documentary for the BBC, Nadia, Anxiety and Me. By the time this podcast comes out, that will be on iPlayer and a lot of people will have already seen it. But as I speak to you, it's going out tonight. How are you feeling about it?
I'm actually really anxious, which is not great,
bless
is it?
You. Oh, that's very on brand, anyway.
Yeah. not deliberately. It's just I can't help it. It's something that's been in the making for forever. It feels like it took months to film, and it was probably one of the most trickiest times because I'd gone from feeling quite anxious, like at my worst, about 14 years ago, and then kind of had to revisit feeling that bad all mm-hmm. over again. So the fact that I'm going to be sharing all of that with everyone, it was really nice once I'd filmed it and it was done and yeah. I'd done everything and it was finished, and now it's like almost D-Day, like here it is, everybody's going to watch it. So I'm hopeful that people have watched it and they have taken something from it, and if they know anyone who has anxiety or know of anyone who might be suffering, you know, that they can watch it and have a better understanding of it, if anything. And I think that's really important. So yeah. I'm nervous and I'm anxious, but I know it's something that we need to do.
Yeah, I think it's a really fantastic thing to do for people, actually, because I think when you are, I mean, I've been through anxiety, so many people have, although yours is particularly, I mean, watching it, I've really felt for you, it looks really difficult. But I mean, for people at home to see somebody like you who has such a fantastic career, wonderful family, and know that you're going through that as well, I think will be such a huge comfort. I mean, when I was watching it, I was wondering how on earth you coped with Great British Bake Off, because I watched that and that makes me feel stressed and panicky. And you were so, you seemed so together, and you obviously won it and were a fantastic star of it. What was that like?
Well, I'd be lying if I said that it didn't make me anxious. You know, yeah. I had several panic attacks while doing Bake Off, leading up to it, while I was filming it, after it. So, you know, I certainly like to throw myself in the deep end, that's for sure.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
It wasn't easy doing that, but it was, again, it's another characteristic of somebody with anxiety, is you just become very good at hiding it. You know, you have to get on with real life. You know, life doesn't stop when you've got anxiety. You have to, you struggle, but you still get on with it. You know, you don't want to smile, but you do. You don't want to get out of bed, but you do. You don't want to get dressed, but you put clothes on. So,
yeah.
You know, it's, that's one of the I think it's just another face of anxiety. So I struggled. And I mean, if you say I had it together, I don't think I look like I had it together on Bake Off. I was a mess a lot of the times. So I spent a lot of time crying. And what lots of people didn't see was I spent a lot of time going back to the hotel room having panic attacks. Mm. And you just become better at hiding it. So, and I think that's why it's so important to speak, because I mean, I can't see the point in this platform if I'm not using it to speak and talk about things that we need to talk about, because anxiety is something that we all experience in our life, whether it's, you know, in a kind of day to day, the kind of normal anxiety, because I think everyone experiences anxiety to some extent, but yeah. It's when it becomes a medical problem that it's an issue. So I think we need to learn when it's a medical issue and when we need to get help, but we're only going to do that if we talk. And yeah. That's why this documentary is so important.
Yeah. I think one thing that really shone through from it is how lovely your relationship is with your husband. Also, I was envisaging like potentially a kind of Richard and Judy situation for you guys further down the line. I could see you co-presenting something. He's lovely.
I don't think he is made for the world of television.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah. But was it nice to work on this with his involvement.
Absolutely. It was, you know, he's my wingman and I am his. And so we, you know, we've gone through this over the last 14 years. He's my best friend and I tell him everything. So it was difficult for him because, you know, there's times when he's felt guilty and thought, why haven't we got help before? You know, why haven't we done something about this? Because life gets in the way.
Yeah.
And that's not his fault. That's something that just happens. You have children, you have families, you have responsibilities and life just gets in the way. And we are so good at putting ourselves second. And especially as a mother, and I know lots of mothers out there who will say, you know, they will get what I'm saying. You know, they'll understand where I'm coming from. You learn to put yourself second always. You never put yourself first. You're always at the bottom of the pile. And that's what I've done for years. And I think by doing that, it's been detrimental for me and my family. So I think when I decided to do this documentary, I said, you know what, I'm going to put myself first, because by putting myself first, I'm putting my family first. And I think...
Yeah, that's one of the big lessons of this, isn't it? Take care of yourself so you can take care of other people. On that note, let's crack on with your advice, which is brilliant. The first one's very practical. Tell me what this is.
Drink lots of water, which is something my mum would always say. And I'm going through Ramadan at the moment. I'm really, really loving my mum's advice right now, but I can't drink any water. But drink lots of water. My mum would say it all the time. She's like, drink water. It's good for you. I don't care if you don't eat. Drink water. Keep hydrated. Never listen to her. Never, ever listen to her. Now I have become my own mother. I'm like, are you drinking enough water? Why have you got chappy lips? Go and drink some water.
I have to say, you have the most gorgeous skin. Oh, so maybe that's down to the...
I am fashioning
you're super
a great,
hydrated.
I'm fashioning a great big cold sore at the moment.
Can't see it.
Can you not?
No, don't tell anyone else.
Lots of makeup. I drink lots of water when I'm not fasting, of course.
Yeah. And how is the fasting going? How do you cope with Ramadan and the hunger?
And the hunger's not a problem, it's the water actually. And it's the lack of, I think what lots of people don't realise is that you have to wake up to have your breakfast before the sun rises. Mm-hmm. So it's not so much the lack of eating, it's more the lack of, you know, the lack of time in which to drink enough water, and also mm-hmm. the broken sleep. So it's 30 days of broken sleep, which is really difficult. So what I do is I try and pack in doing, like I'll do lots of things around Ramadan, but during Ramadan, I like to do lots of writing, lots of creative work, get my house back in order and life admin. That's kind of what I spend those 30 days doing.
So in a way, does it feel like quite a special time for you?
It's great because it's working in this industry, you know, working with food. There's moments where I think, wow, this is like gluttony at its best. It's food on food on food. It's too much sometimes. So sometimes it's a really good opportunity to just step back and really appreciate the food that I put on my plate and really appreciate what I eat and appreciate that glass of water, because there can be moments in my kind of work day or when I'm out with the kids on the weekend, we're just eating and it's just kind of mindless. And so what happens in 30 days in the next 30 days is you kind of really think about what you're going to eat. Think about what you put in your mouth, and it's a great reset. You know, this is a really good reset. All I'm saying is day 31, forget the reset. I reset on day 32. And I'm like, okay, now get back to it. Everything I've learned, I'm going to try and implement over the next year. But like, On Eid day, when we're celebrating, there are no rules.
Yeah.
There are no rules.
Like Christmas. Yeah. So your second piece of advice, tell me about this. This is a piece of advice you got from a teacher.
Yeah.
Tell me what this is.
Always be the one to end an argument, whether you're right or wrong. And I think that is, I never really understood that as a child. And I'm learning the older I get, like the things that the adults in my life said to me as a child, now they've all kind of come to fruition. I understand why they said all of that. And I am obviously becoming my mum now, and I'm becoming that older person. And I'll say stuff to my kids and they'll look at me and say, ugh, whatever. And they'll sort of roll their eyes and think, I don't know, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And I know they'll come to my age and they'll understand. But this bit of advice, I kind of really understood this advice when I got married, because whenever we've had a discussion, my husband and I, thank goodness, we've been married 14 years, never had an argument. Never had an argument. It'll be today, won't it? I'm saying it now and it'll be today. Never had an argument. But the one thing that we kind of live by is, you know, somebody has to end the argument. Say sorry. Whether you're right or wrong, saying sorry just makes it easy.
Yeah.
And that's what I've found. you know, as I get older with my parents, with my brothers and sisters, we're older, but we're, you know, we grew up in one family, but we're all very different people. So, you know, arguments flare up sometimes, you know, sure. And but I find that whether I'm right or wrong, saying sorry always feels like the right thing to do. And just saying, can we just move on from this?
Yeah.
And that's what I find with, as an adult now, with all of the kind of disputes that I might have in my family or my friends or with, like, with my family mainly, and you know, with my husband or with the kids, even with the kids, just like, can we just say sorry to each other and just move on?
Yeah.
So that's quite nice.
Do you never have that feeling though of like, girl, why should I say sorry when it was definitely the other person's, you know, fault?
No, you know what?
That's impressive.
There was a point as a teenager where, especially with my dad, if he was wrong, I was not saying sorry to him. He was going to grovel. And he never did.
Yeah.
Like, still never.
Eventually, you just got tired of waiting.
Yeah, and I just, I like peace. I don't like confrontation. I quite enjoy just, like, I like, for me, not arguing and getting along with everyone is an easy life.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, all the effort you have to put into being angry with someone, it just isn't worth it.
Yeah.
All that energy you could put into making a nice cake, you know.
That's, you know, true. That, yeah, is good advice.
Yeah.
Your third piece of advice is also kind of food related.
Yeah. Never give anyone your last Rolo. You will regret it when you're older.
So who told you this?
My much older cousin at the time. He must have obviously given someone a Rolo at some point and realized when he's older. It's like, because I think when you're a kid, it's really easy to give up your chocolate because you don't care. But when you're older, I think, because when I was younger, I didn't care about what I put in my mouth. I was eating whatever I wanted. But when you're older, you're kind of slightly more conscious of what you're eating, what you're putting in your mouth, if you're putting on weight and yeah, all of that. So he just... That I think it's great advice because, like, when you're older, you regret it. You're like, why did I give away my Rolo for?
But you can buy some more Rolos.
Well, then you can buy some more. So, I mean, there's it's win-win, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wondered if it also kind of plays into a little bit what we were talking about before about kind of looking after yourself so that you can look after other people, or, like, keeping a little something for yourself and not giving everything away. Or am I reading too much into this?
Oh, I mean, maybe a little bit. It's just a Rolo, but sometimes if it's a Rolo and you want it, you should keep it for yourself.
Yeah,
you know, we're so good at just, like, especially as a mum.
Yeah,
you know, like,
give the kids everything on your plate.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I had dinner last night and my little boy was awake and I asked him, I could hear him going to the bathroom, and I said, do you fancy, are you awake? And he said, yeah, I'm awake. I said, do you want to come down? I couldn't finish my dinner. The truth is, I could finish my dinner, but as he was moving around, I felt a little bit guilty because yeah, we were eating his favorite. We were having chow mein that I'd made and some prawn toast that I'd made, and it's one of his favorite things to eat, and I physically couldn't get it down my mouth. I couldn't eat it. So I had him come down. I was like, oh, I'm not hungry, do you want to have this? And he was like, yes, please. And he goes, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, I'm not hungry, I'm paying the price now.
Oh, bless you.
But I just couldn't eat it, especially when I knew he was moving around upstairs. So yeah, I'm yet to master the art of keeping something for myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, I definitely think, I follow you on Instagram, as I'm sure lots of people listening to this do, and you are nonstop caring for the family, cooking, working, doing something, looking after your husband. And I think that really shines through the documentary as well. You give a lot of yourself to other people, I think.
That is, yeah. I mean, I'm really conscious of, being in the public eye, you have to be conscious of how much of yourself, for me certainly, I have to worry. I worry about how much of myself I give, but it's about giving the right bits.
Yeah,
you know, it's
and
about
to the right people.
And to the right people. And it's about giving the right bits of yourself. And I think it would be, for me personally, and lots of people might disagree, but for me it would be selfish to keep this to myself, because this bit of information, this making this documentary, giving this little bit of myself is going to help so many people. I know it will. I know when I first said I wanted to make this documentary, I was so nervous and so anxious, but I had to constantly remind myself why I was doing this. This is to help, and I know it's because it's going to help so many people. Yeah. Because I would have given an arm and a leg to find somebody anywhere out there who said, I know exactly what you're going through.
Yeah.
And that's what this documentary is. It's saying, I know what you're going through and you're not alone.
Yeah. When did you finish filming it?
Just before Christmas.
Okay, so a few months ago.
Yeah, yeah.
So have you kind of carried on in your journey with it since then? And
so yeah, I have a better understanding of my panic disorder, of the PTSD. So what it's opened up for me is a new world, and I'm learning more every day. So I'm learning, and I think a lot of your own, your treatment is learning about what you've got. And so, you know, there's a wealth of things that you can go out there and do, whether it's privately or through the NHS, but there is help out there. It's just finding the right help for you. And I have to, eventually I will go back to doing therapy, but what happens is life gets in the way. And so did the filming, did a little bit of therapy, and then life got in the way, and then Christmas happened, and then the new year, and that was it. And it's just like, okay, so I need to get back to this. But I haven't had many panic. I haven't had a solid, like, big panic attack since. Panic has come and anxiety has risen, but I've managed to ignore it and make it go away.
That's fantastic.
Without it becoming
overwhelming.
Without it becoming something massive. So,
yeah.
I've definitely learned something from it.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Your next piece of advice, tell me this one.
This is one that my RE teacher gave me. He said, pray because you want to, not just because God is telling you. And I found that he was a Muslim religious education teacher. And for somebody to say that, you know, I grew up reading books and I grew up being told that you've got to pray because God said. You got to pray because God said. And, you know, I was born in a Muslim family, but I certainly didn't find my faith growing up in a Muslim family. I found that by myself. And, you know, lots of people were, you know, played a part in that. Like my religious studies teacher, my own curiosity, you know, took me to the library at the age of 14 where I was sitting reading books because I was just so curious. And, you know, I wanted to know what it was that made me a Muslim. And so when he said, well, you know, you shouldn't just pray because God said, you should pray because you want to pray. And to me, that was a different, that wasn't just rules and God and a book. It was spirituality. And that's the first time
your own relationship with God.
So that's the first time I experienced spirituality and understanding my relationship with God and how important that was. And for me, that always stuck with me. And I always say it to my kids. I always say, look, yeah, you pray because God asked you to pray, but you've got to want to pray. You've got to want to have that line of communication open with God. And I think people are so afraid of speaking about their religion and speaking about their spirituality or their connection with God. And why should we be afraid of that? It's, you know, why should I be afraid of saying that I follow a God or I have a God or that I follow a religion? I'm not afraid to say that. Yeah. And, you know, 3 years ago, if you'd asked me, I'd be slightly shy of talking about it. But now I think it's really important.
What's changed then?
Just not shy anymore. I just don't, I don't care as much anymore. I just think it's important not to care about what everybody thinks. Sometimes we have to stop trying to become this default person or become what everybody else wants us to be. You have to, I mean, we're all the same if we don't have our own thoughts and our own thought processes. So, you know, I believe in God and that's okay. But for me for my teacher, when he said, it's not just about being told to believe in God, it's about wanting to believe in God and just wanting to do it for yourself. And that for me is probably one of the most important lessons that I learned from him, is because actually I'm a Muslim because I want to be.
Yeah, that makes it so much more meaningful as well, because I think so many kids, you know, have a religious aspect in their schooling or whatever in this country, but a lot of the time it's like presented without any of that kind of, you know, spiritual element. So your fifth piece of advice, tell me this one.
This is my dad, and he's just an absolute legend. He's insane, but he's a legend. He's great. He says all sorts of rubbish, and I don't listen to most of the stuff he says. But when he has like gems,
a pearl
you know,
of
like
wisdom,
like he doesn't say. He says like it's utter rubbish mostly, and then suddenly he'll say something, and I'm like, oh, can we just stitch that on a pillow, please? You know, like it's incredible. He says, never eat alone. If you are, then you're doing it all wrong.
Oh.
Basically, what he meant by that, because there are lots of people out there who do eat alone, who perhaps don't have family or don't have friends, but do have to eat on their own. Or maybe they moved away from home and they're living on their own, whatever. Different circumstances mean that people will eat on their own. But my dad had this thing. So every weekend he would invite loads of people around, like all of our relatives, like 50 people in our house. He'd dig a hole in the garden and we'd cook out of a big pot, hole in the ground, massive fire.
Wow.
We'd cook. So we always had people around. Sometimes I'm like, Dad, I kind of want to eat alone, you know, like just we don't want to have 50 people over for dinner on a Saturday night. But the reason why he said that was because it wasn't about the actual physical action of sitting and eating at a table. It was about sharing. It's about giving. Especially at a time like this during Ramadan, I literally have fed my neighbours every single day. And I did have to knock and say, I'm sorry, if I'm being overbearing, can you tell me? Because I don't genuinely don't know when to stop. And he's like, no. Our neighbour Gavin, he was like, no, absolutely. You send it round. I'm happy to have it.
Aww.
So, you know, I think it wasn't about the physical action of sitting at a table. It's more about sharing and giving and checking on your neighbours. We used to have an old elderly, really elderly neighbour who would, he was alone and he would have sardine and red onion sandwiches. And my dad used to say, come on, let me send you over some food. And he'd send him over some food. And they would, it was an excuse for him, for our old neighbour to eat. We used to call him Grandad. And he would eat his food, but dad would sit and have a chat with him. So it wasn't about the eating alone. It's like,
it's about love, really.
It's about sharing that kind of, and sharing that love and sharing the food, but also keeping the lines of communication open. Again, you know, like my neighbours, I always say my neighbours are my family first.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones that live around me. They're the ones that live on my doorstep. They're the ones I'll look after first. And just this morning as I walked out, my neighbour knew that I was really anxious and she didn't manage to catch me, but she managed to catch the driver and said, could you just tell her good luck for me?
Oh,
and
isn't that what so sweet.
That for me, that had a tear in my eye this morning, because surely that's what having people that you care about around, you know, that's what's important.
It's all about. Yeah. Do you think your career in food really all stems from your family life?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the love for food in our family is unreal. I mean, we need Ramadan just to, like, stop.
Chill out
just
for
stop,
a few weeks.
Like, just stop, guys. We can't do this all year round. But we literally, we just eat. I mean, all the time. I had them round about 4 weekends ago. They were at my house, my sisters. And that's all we did. We just ate. And it's just like, I had to roll them out of my house. Just, like, roll them into, stuff them into their cars. But yeah, I think it starts from, you know, my dad was a restaurateur his whole life. You know, worked front of house. Mum is an amazing, amazing cook. I mean, I don't even know how she does it. She works a full-time job, comes home and cooks these incredible dishes. You know, my mum has less enthusiasm for food. She kind of cooks what we want to eat, and she's like, oh, she doesn't eat as much as we do, but she just cooks because she knows we love it. And that's why I cook sometimes, because I know my kids love certain things and I will cook it for them. So I can see myself in my mum. You know, I can see how I've suddenly become my mum all these years later. And
nurturer.
Yeah, my dad, you know, worked in restaurants his whole life and he's very experimental. So, you know, from him, I've learned how to kind of push the boat out and maybe just try different things and not be afraid of cooking different things.
Yeah.
So,
So your final piece of good advice is more of a sort of almost a mental health tip.
Yeah.
Tell me this one.
So this is one that I say to myself quite often. Write down your thoughts at night, good and bad, and put them to bed. Only then can you sleep yourself.
Okay. And do you actually make a habit of doing that?
I have a notepad and a pen by my side, bedside, and a bedside table, along with my anti-wrinkle cream. So, you know, because you got to look after every inside and out, inside
body
and out.
Soul, yeah.
Inside and out. So anti-wrinkle cream and my notepad and my pen. And then I write everything down. So down to like recipes that I think I want to do that next day, or, you know, thoughts that I'm having or feelings, or if I'm feeling slightly anxious, I'll quickly jot that down. And I never keep these pages. I rip, you know, like eventually I'll go back and I'll get rid of them. But sometimes I look back and think, oh, I can't believe I was feeling like that. So it's kind of a really weirdly nice journal at the same time. And sometimes I'll miss recipes and think, oh, I haven't done that, I've got to do that. So I'll do that. So I genuinely do feel that when I write everything down, that's the only time I can actually go to bed
with a totally clear head.
And then that's kind of my routine at night. So anti-wrinkle cream, write everything down, put myself to bed, put my thoughts to bed, and then put myself to bed, and never ever pick up my phone.
Yeah. Oh, really? When do you put your phone down?
Long before that. I don't even charge it near my bed anymore.
That's
just charge it.
So smart. We all need to do that.
Right away from my bed. I don't look at it because I just don't need it. No.
You're so right. I need to take that piece of advice. So the worst piece of advice you've ever heard, this was from a friend. Tell me this one.
So my friend said, your parents are always wrong. Don't listen to them.
Were they actually talking about your parents specifically or just parents in general?
I think they were talking about parents in general.
Yeah, there's definitely a time in life when you do feel like they are crazy.
But I remember, you know, as a teenager, when somebody says, don't listen to your parents, they're always wrong. And I remember the first time this friend had said this to me, and I kind of went home and everything my parents then said felt wrong.
Oh, no.
I was like, It's just like, it was that moment. I hadn't ever felt like they were always wrong. And it was only the moment when she said that everything they say is wrong. It felt real, everything they say. I was like, no, well, what you're saying is wrong. And I was sort of kind of slight of protesting. I was kind of found myself protesting with everything that they were saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, now as a 34-year-old woman, I can safely say they were not always wrong. They were not. And there were times in my life where I did think, oh, I don't think you're right. And they weren't always right.
Yeah.
But, you know, now that I'm much older, there's lots of things that they did say that I actually think, actually, I get why you said that. Or at least I understand. I have a better understanding of why they might have said certain things. And also, you know, my older two are now kind of going into the teenage years, and I've got my little girl. I always tell them that, you know, mommy doesn't get everything right. You realise that. And as much as I want to think that I get everything right, sometimes I'm like, I got that right. I always tell them, mommy does not get everything right. And I admit that. Yeah. I always, because I'm not a perfect person, and we have a rule in our house, you know, they get things wrong. This is the first time they're going to be children, and it's the first time I'm ever going to be a mum. So I'm going to get things wrong. They're going to get things wrong.
Everyone's trying their best.
Yeah, so yeah. Let's get things wrong together and meet in the middle somewhere. And that's kind of the rule in our house. So we get things wrong together. So the thing I've learned from that is actually, you know what, parents can get stuff wrong. Just not everything. It's not everything.
Yeah, and give them a break.
I was so hard on my parents.
Yeah.
Oh,
me too. We all were, I think. So don't feel bad.
I dread the teenage years because goodness knows what's going to happen when my kids go. They're already starting to rebel a little bit.
Well, it's normal, isn't it? But I can't see that coming from you. And from what I've seen of your husband, who seems just as lovely as you, I can't see that you're not going to have very sweet, lovely kids.
Yeah. I mean, so, I think we should. Yeah. I think the one thing we should do is we should be able to openly say when we're proud of our children, because I think we're quite shy of saying, oh, no. They're just like, we want to average our children out all the time. It's like, do you know what? Actually, they are good kids and I am really proud of them, and they're turning into pretty decent human beings.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. As long as they don't break the law and do everything as they should.
Yeah.
I think they'll be just fine, and they're happy and they're smiling and they're doing, you know, whatever makes them happy. I think, you know, I'm really proud of my kids.
Yeah, as you should be. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and congratulations on the documentary. I think it's really valuable, and we can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much to Nadia Hussein, and you can watch Nadia, Anxiety and Me on BBC iPlayer now. I hope you're loving Grazia Life Advice. If so, please help us out by subscribing, rating it, reviewing it, or sharing it. See you next week for more advice from women worth listening to.